My name is Simon Killane, and I've lived in the UK for many decades. And I was a Wiltshire councillor. I was the lead councillor for scrutiny in Wiltshire Unity Council from 2009 to 2017. I've worked in the corporate sector as a product designer. I've worked in the charity sector, voluntary sector. So I've had a very interesting insight. Got a very interesting insight into the world of sort of charity, public sector, private sector, and how they all work. About me.
Okay, so what about Jeffrey Epstein and Donald Trump? Because last year, 2024, when he was running, he was asked about the disclosures of the JFK files, the 9/11 files, and also the Epstein files. And when the Epstein files were mentioned, he was a little bit more hesitant. Now he's, it seems, trying to get these files released, but he's being told, "I'm very sorry, but some of them cannot be released." And this is after we've had a so-called suicide, which looks far more like an execution of Jeffrey Epstein in
Of
jail,
course.
as well as Ghislaine Maxwell, his partner, who seems to have been the main instigator of this little honey trap cell where the rich and powerful were being brought in to have sex with minors and then and being filmed. And then this is obviously some sort of potential for blackmail afterwards. But anyway, how do you think Trump fits into all of this? And why did you get in touch with me this week particularly? Because you what you were saying was that it resonated with some of your experience.
So I mean the good analogy is that when I was in politics and you went to a party conference and you sat in a room with maybe 100 people and you looked onto the stage and you saw lots of good people getting up talking about policies and changes to, governance of the party or candidates and talking about the environment and, the things they'd like to do when they're in government. And I began to realize over time, because I'm an engineer, I wasn't really into politics. I was into design and product design, but I was in this political world. I began to realize that the people who were controlling everything were not the people on the stage. They were people sitting in the room, highly anonymous, so basically not really in the pub, not at all in the public domain, very hidden. And they were controlling everything. They were controlling who got to be the politicians, what was said on that stage. The finances of the party and so on and so forth, but also they were very much, from what I could see, and I began to learn, they were very much their specialism was PR, so public relations. And when I say PR, they knew how to craft stories. They were story makers, and the other things were very rich. They were mostly men. They were very rich. There was not many of them. They were highly connected. And in the case when I was in politics in the Liberal Party, I believed they were highly connected to the US. So when I began to see this, and I got to know some of one in particular, and they liked me because they thought I was very good at speaking, and I was involved with community, and I was passionate about changing things, and I had a lot of people in my community liked me, and all this sort of stuff. So I was, pretty good as a potentially a guy who could be a good politician. But over time, I began to realize that the whole thing was rotten. And what I started calling it in my head was a shamocracy. So basically, this is not democracy. This is a sham, a total sham. And so when I saw the Epstein thing and I've seen what's been going on, I mean, it's not just the Epstein thing. It's the wars. It's Israel. It's the Ukraine thing. It's, Trudeau's dad in Canada. I didn't even know about that. There's a whole pile of scandal about that as well. There's a whole cauldron of things going on, and you can almost sense the frustration of the public, because the public are more and more getting to this point where, who do you trust? Can you trust anybody? They go through this process of saying, let's elect a black guy, because they've suffered, they've had all sorts of racial issues. Obama will save us. Obama will transform the US. And they realize that it doesn't really make any difference because he's bought. They think, well, no, Trump. Trump is this independent guy. Yeah, he's really sort of, he has his own mind. He does his own thing. And you can clearly see it's not the case. And for me, what I see in the public sort of discussion is everybody's looking at these people but they're not really important. And this might sound really crazy, and people will probably find it offensive, because when you realize you've been duped, you can do two things. You can either go, "No, it's not true," or you can just eat him a pie and say, "Oh my gosh, I just didn't know." The whole of society is being completely duped. We're being duped into this idea that we have a democracy. We do not have democracy in the Western world. Absolutely not. And I could spend the next few days explaining mechanistically why. Basically, the political parties are bought and paid for by very powerful people who basically have been doing this for generations. The other thing I would say, our political system is not broken, because it was always broken. We've never had a system in politics that actually worked. In fact, what's happening bit by bit is it's beginning to get to a point where people are beginning to realize, with the internet and access to information and so on, that there's something not right about it, that it just doesn't work. And when you see someone like Trump as a president of a country, even those MAGA people you see in the US, Make America Great Again, are all beginning to trigger to think, well, there's something not right here. And it's not right because they're not the guys controlling anything, right? That what the people who are controlling things are invisible, and they're not in the public domain. And they're, I would suggest there's in America, there's probably less than 100. They do not have any interest in nations. They're not interested in America. This is another mad delusion of society that somehow the world is broken up into countries. The people that actually control what's really going on in the world are complete globalists. They're interested in their power and their control and their financial interests all around the world. They're not religious people. In other words, they're not interested in trying to help the Jews or help the Christians, help the Muslims. They will use religion to create conflict. They want us all to be totally distracted in conflicts with each other, racial conflicts, conflicts about gender, conflicts about our religions, conflicts about immigration. That they're all distractions. Conflicts between men and women, setting a tone where people, even men and women, despise and hate each other.
Well, look, I'm
The
sorry
more
to interrupt
delusion.
you, Simon, but since you're Irish, I've got to ask you a bit about the Troubles, because I lived over there for a while during the Troubles, and it's one of the things I kept hearing from the localers in Enniskillen, near where I was this is not a religious conflict. And yet every news report, pretty much over in the UK, I mean, it was actually very different. The television and radio in Northern Ireland itself is talking about, oh, this Protestant terror group, this Catholic group, the IRA. So it was framed very much as a,
It's all framing.
what do you make of that conflict?
It's all framing. If you look at, say, what's really stunning about all of this is that if you look at what happened in Ireland and the partition, and how the again, just like you see with Pakistan and other places, you see with Gaza in Israel, the old imperial power, UK and Britain, draws a rudimentary line across the top of the country and says, "Okay, to the people on this side are British and the people on this side are Irish." And if you look at, for example, what has happened, I mean, I find it really amazing. If you look at what's happened in Ireland, that they've got to this point where they have a devolved parliament and they have a police force for Northern Ireland instead of the Royal Ulster Constabulary, and they have this system where they're trying to say the people who live in that country, whether they're Protestant or Catholic, they now have access to services. They have a sort of equality. And we can't just devolve parliament even though we've got these people of different religions. And then you hear people like, all these politicians that knew about the peace process, Clinton and Tony Blair and all this, they know that it's pretty much impossible in Gaza to have a two-state solution. Impossible. It would never work. And they knew this because of what they saw and what they did in Ireland. Because basically it's a patchwork quilt of different groups of people in Gaza. But also you have got an undercurrent there, which is that the US is using that piece of land as a land base to control resources, the flow of oil, gas, the canal, all that sort of stuff, to basically stay as the number one power. They
Well,
all
yeah,
know
and to project US power in the
and
region.
projections, and they all know this, right? And so the crazy thing, if you associate with Northern Ireland, you can see in Northern Ireland how, in the end, because they couldn't give a stuff in the end, the reason why they left Ireland in the 1920s and Ireland got its independence because they couldn't, it was too much hassle for them. They were more now focused on the discovery of oil and the First World War and all that sort of stuff. So they just got rid of it, just like they did to other countries. It was like, get rid of it. But they left it in a mess, right? It wasn't born of religion. It was born of an imperialist desire, which was, a long legacy of imperialist desire and imperialist, the imperialistic mindset of the elites in Britain to dominate and control other people, resources, money, power, and dominate the world. And Ireland was part of that. And you see in Gaza, for example, the starvation of the people. You just look at the famine in Ireland. There was loads of food in Ireland exported out of the country when people were starving to death in Ireland. So that's all one of the reasons you'll notice why the Irish are now very keen to support the Palestinians. They're one of the only countries in the world. They got rid of the Israeli embassy, shut it down, and they've come under a lot of fire. Because in their sort of pain body, in their sort of psyche, they still feel the sort of the pain of what is happening to those people in that country. So these religious conflicts are, in my view, they're stoked. You will have conflicts. You will have people who don't like each other. You will have religious people who don't like. You will have racists. You will have, bigotry. But what happens with these PR machines is they stoke them. They basically try to inflame everything. They try to stir everything up so that it can create some sort of power dynamic, which either distracts everybody away from what's going on or gives them a justification. So a good example is Netanyahu. Netanyahu is an American. Netanyahu was educated in the US. He's dual citizen. But Netanyahu has gone rogue. Netanyahu is the teenager of the US who basically is a, he's a right-wing Zionist. And he's obsessed with this extremist form of this idea that this piece of land was given to them by God. It's all madness. And basically, Americans just let him run riot because they don't have to take the heat. They know that if the Muslim population of Gaza increases because they have more children, then basically you could get to a point where the country would have to have, supposing it had equal rights and everybody has a vote. Eventually, at some stage, probably the Jews would become a minority and the Muslims in that country would say, we don't really want to have these
Yeah, I
kinds
mean,
of
this
people.
again, isn't it? It resonates with
Again.
the Northern Ireland, because the British, the loyalists particularly, were scared to death of the Catholic policy around contraception and also the basic idea that the Catholics were breeding much quicker.
Yes, and this goes on and on. So, for example, if you look at Ukraine, Russia, the reality is that it's China. It's all about China. It's about America's dominance as an imperial power, and they're losing it. And they know that this Make America Great Again is about the fact that you're acknowledging it's not great, right? So basically, what's happening is you've got these conflicts that are set up. Well, let's set up a conflict between Ukraine and Russia. Why? Because we can't convince our populations to go to war with Russia. If we did, we'd probably have nuclear war. So let's just get them killing each other. So let's get the Ukrainians killing the Russians. Literally, brothers killing brothers. And they could stop these wars in a flash. They could have, in Ireland, they could have stopped the famine. They could have stopped all that trouble they had in Northern Ireland generations ago. The reality is that, and so the reality is for me is that. I was in a council, a regional council, and you'd say, well, okay, we hear all this stuff, Simon, but what connection has this got to you and your experiences in politics? Because I saw exactly the same mechanisms going on. So basically, when I was on a regional council and I started to influence decisions that were going to move millions of pounds into someone else's pocket. So when I started off just, dealing with potholes and, the local fate and, going to the mayoral inauguration and, bits and pieces like that, getting to know people's issues around the place. I was loved. But when I accidentally got myself involved with big decisions, when I became the leading person in scrutiny and a council had a £1 billion budget, of which about half of 500 million was decided pretty much within the council. Huge planning area, one of the biggest in the country, where land and property has been sold and runs into God knows how many tens and tens of millions of pounds. But a lot of money. But I got to a position where I was really where the people in politics could not buy me off. They could not buy me off, so they couldn't offer me money. They didn't have dirt on me. This is where the Epstein thing comes in. They didn't have something they could find in my past that showed I had a gay relationship with somebody, or I had an affair, or I'd stolen money, or I was a drink driver, or I'd fought with somebody. They didn't have any of this stuff. And so there was a whole sequence of things that started occurring for me where attempts were made to buy me off, where when I didn't do that, I was asked to join particular organizations. I didn't do that. I was offered opportunities in the political system. I didn't want to do those. Developers tried to get into manipulating me and having meetings with me. I refused. In fact, I outed them. I outed them into the media, and I had, hundreds of people coming to an event in a town, and I stood up and said, "They're lying." And then, of course, I got to a point where we nearly had a major influence on national planning policy, which would mean that the whole policy for planning in the whole country would change, which would change, I don't know, hundreds of millions of pounds worth of decision
I
making.
mean, it sounds to me as if you're talking here about the world of property. Obviously, this, since Britain is not a lot, no longer a manufacturing country, all of, much of the work from day to day is
Yes,
now,
property.
well, it's not about making things anymore, but property seems to be almost like the number one industry now. But so anyway, so am I right in thinking
You're right, son,
that this
and actually,
world,
you're right.
this is
You're
the
right,
world
but
you started moving in that
yes.
caused
But
the
the thing,
problem?
Tony, if you and wherever you live in your home, and you've got a half an acre of ground, and suddenly somebody discovers there's a load of lithium underneath it, there's a lithium mine there. Very quickly, it won't be property; it'll be lithium, for making batteries for cars, or it's gold, or whatever. It's resources, it's money, and in the UK, land is gold. I mean, a 10 grand piece of land can be turned into £1 million. All those lovely villages you see, those lovely, beautiful Cotswold type villages, and people coming out and, worrying about the dog poo and, people speeding in their village. You don't realise they're surrounded by a red line, and that red line is the zone in which development can occur. And you push that red line out from one field to another, you're adding millions of pounds worth of money to somebody's investment. So there'll be politicians and network landowners and estate agents and developers who've over many years figured out how they're going to basically make a fortune for themselves. Anybody who comes along and says, "Hold on, shouldn't the community have a say? Where we have our school, where we have our supermarket, where we have our housing, where we have our community centre, shouldn't we be able to haggle with these developers and say, if you're going to build here, you need to build it in this way and you need to give some money back?" The problem with that is, of course, is that the system is not built for that. The system is built to make the public think that's the case, but in reality, it isn't. Let me give you a really good example. I remember going to an event in a town hall where a developer wanted to build, I think it was 70 houses or something, on a local field. And this developer sent had a presentation with big boards showing what they were going to do with the land, the housing, three-dimensional pictures and so on, and how they were going to engage with the community and asking for information. They sent a lot of, usually it was young graduates, young planning graduates who were kind of, sent to stand there in this community hall and so on. And in the town, there was a big campaign, a typical sort of campaign. "We don't want any more houses here. We don't want big developers building houses. They're destroying the town. What about the flood risk and all that sort of stuff?" And so I went there to have a look, and I spoke to the developers and I spoke to the residents and so on, and I encouraged the residents to go and have a look and see what they thought. The MP at that time came to the event, and he stood up in the middle of the room. He came into a very imposing guy. His name was James Gray. He's no longer an MP, but you probably know of him. And he stood up in the middle of the room, and he sort of had a crowd of these, blue rinse conservative supporters, a lot of them very old people, going, "Oh my gosh, James Gray, you're a fantastic guy. We want to hear from you. What do you think, James?" And James stood up there and said, "You developers will never get to build here. This is a beautiful town. It's been destroyed. The people need to have a say. And Simon is doing his neighbour plan and all this stuff." And he got a huge clap from the residents. And probably 5 or 10 minutes later, after all the clapping had died down, he's over talking to the developer saying, "Oh, come and have a chat with me. I know about property development. I had a consultancy in London," and swaps cards with them. So what's happening is the developers know that the whole all of politics is a sham, that the whole thing is a pantomime, that the people who are standing there think that their MP is actually, representing them. But the MP is basically a leech. And he's thinking, "I need money. I need money for my campaign. I need money for my business, my networks." This developer, if they work with me, I'm they'll probably get a good opportunity to do what they want to do. So he then goes over and he starts saying, "Hi guys, here's my card. You give me your card, I'll give you mine." And I see this, and why do I see this? Because they think I'm part of it. They think, "Oh well, Simon must be one of us, because he wouldn't be in politics for any other reason." I look at it and I think you're a bunch of corrupt bar stewards, basically. And I've seen this in several places. This is not just once. Really good example was in Chippenham. A guy called Duncan Hames. You heard of Duncan Hames? The MP Duncan Hames? Can you hear me? Yeah, well, Duncan Hames was the MP for Chippenham. And I remember going to an event once, and we were having real troubles with the neighbourhood plan because of national policy, and we really needed to get to talk to an MP. And the MP, he was a Conservative MP because there was coalition going on, and we knew that a neighbourhood plan was going to be undermined, and if we didn't get this government minister to latch in and give us some guidance, we'd be in trouble. So I basically went up to Duncan Hames at an event and I said, "Hi, Duncan, I really love what you do. Listen, we really need some help here. We're doing this amazing thing with this neighbour plan. It's setting policy for the whole, potentially for the whole country. We're doing something that's never been done before." He was like very supportive. "Yes, Simon, you're a great guy. You're doing a great job," and everything else. And he was just trying to grab his coat. And he said, "But Simon, I haven't got time. I'd love to talk to you, but I haven't got time." I said, "But it's really important. Can I have 5 minutes to—" "I'm sorry, Simon, I haven't got time. You go to Chippenham, go to my office, my PA," and so on. And as he's picking his coat to walk away, another guy comes over. And this guy comes over and says, "Hi, hello, Duncan. You don't know me, but I need a couple of minutes of your time." And Duncan is again, "Oh, no, I can't talk to you. I'd love—" The guy pulls out a card and said, "Well, this is one of my businesses. It's worth, I think, say, it's a 13 million or a 15 million pound business, and I have money." Immediately, Duncan puts his jacket down, turns around to the guy, has less than a 5 minute conversation in which he tells the guy he would like him to come to London and sit on a select committee. Right? So I'm watching this and thinking, oh my gosh, you could do the most amazing things as a community representative, as a politician, and none of these people are interested. What they're interested in is the money. It's the money they're interested in. They don't give a stuff about representing people at all. And what they're doing is they're using a PR machine to basically give the impression. They find out what people like, they don't like, and la la la. And then they create leaflets, they put the leaflets out, they run campaigns. But they're all fakery. I mean, I remember the Liberal Party. I couldn't understand. It was like a constituency of North Wiltshire and other places at about, I don't know, 100,000 people, 70,000 in North Wales and other places. And I could not understand how the Liberal Party only had like 200 members or something like that. But every time you looked at an event or there was a photograph taken, there were loads of people. There were loads of people because they were taking them from other counties. They were getting people who weren't even members of the Liberal Party. When Nick Clegg would come around and do something, all these banners would be behind because they'd have a PR guy arranging it all to make it look like everything was being done in such a way that there were loads of people interested and so on. Basically, all fakery, completely. Even when I met various MPs, I was astonished at how little they knew about anything. You could ask them a question about something to do with, local hospitals or budgetary things in a council where millions were spent on roads or things, again, talking about planning, housing, different developments, and so on. They had no idea. All they were doing was just, it was just buzzwords. It was just like, "Well, the Tories are trying to destroy the country. We will stop them." But when you asked them about any detail, they had no clue. And they had no interest. And in fact, the more I probed them with my sort of probing questions about, say, something that was important to me, like, say, dementia care in Wiltshire, or there's not enough dentists or whatever, they would just get frustrated. And I've seen this with Nick Clegg. They get frustrated. They sort of say, "Thank you, that's enough now. We'll get somebody to talk to you about later on." Because they had no clue what they were talking about and they didn't care. So I ended up in a situation where I lost all faith in the political system completely. And I left the Liberal Party and became an independent. And then when I left because it's very tribal, when I left the Liberal Party and I became an independent, I was courted by the Conservatives to join the Conservatives, the offer of a cabinet position. But then, of course, the hatred that came out of that, because they play a dirty tribal game as well. Once you're out of the party, it's very religious. Once you're these PR guys who are very clever, it's like a cult. So if you leave the cult, you are the devil, and they'll try and turn everybody against you. And then they'll use any means possible, any means possible to destroy you, right? I remember once the guy who's leading the Liberal Democrats, the Western counties, the guy who's a really prominent member of the Liberal Democrats. I remember going to his house, looking at some leaflets that he had made, and I was going to send them around my community. When I looked at the leaflets, I looked at him and I said to him, "I will not put these leaflets out because they're full of lies." And I said to him, "What I will do with them," I said, "is I will take them into my garden. I'll burn them all." He threw me out of his house. He was furious. And of course, it was a huge mistake for me, for my career as a politician, because I just upset a really key, powerful guy, what I would call a covert narcissist.
Well, what do you mean?
Basically.
What sort of lies?
Oh, just complete lies. So lies I mean, overt lies. So when you on your leaflets that when you when they put a headline, you know, Tories trying to destroy Wiltshire, you know, old lady, you know, I'm making this up, but this is the type of stuff. Old lady has got no money because she's been starved by the council because they won't do this for her. She's got no money, you know, potholes everywhere. You know, Simon has done these things despite these people on the council. And of course, for me, what happened is I was a design engineer, and when I got on the council, I couldn't give a stuff about politics. I didn't care about whether people were conservative or liberal or whatever. And at that time, the conservatives were the majority on the council. And the people who ran the conservative council, one of them was a guy called John Thompson, the other one was a lady called Jane Scott. They were quite hated by the Conservative Party. In fact, Thompson told me he never went to a party conference. And Thompson and I got on, and because he and I got on, and we had a few rows with each other, and it wasn't like we were friends, but because we got on, I was able to lever him to get things for the place I lived in. So silly stuff like, you know, sorting out somebody's issue about and trying to get into a nursing home, or getting roads repaired because there was potholes, or, you know, sorting out things for the people in the area. Of course, the problem with the Liberal Party at that time was you're almost seen as a traitor because you manage to build a relationship with one of the most powerful people on the council to get things done for you and your community. Because he's a conservative, they see you as being in bed with him. So the party political thing does not work in councils at all. It's a sham, complete sham. And so I was lucky because the people who led the council just wanted to get things done. Even though I was a liberal, they could see I was kind of trustworthy. Then when I became the independent head of scrutiny, you had to be somebody who was not going to play dirty because you were scrutinising the policies of the council. And sometimes things go wrong, so you're scrutinising something that doesn't work. With the liberals and with those PR-headed mad people, they would want to find out what doesn't work in the council and then put it all over leaflets and exaggerate it. So what happens is you have a situation in the council where you can't physically solve problems. The party political system doesn't allow you to solve problems because the parties act in a very tribal religious way. But it's worse than that. The parties are networked to the national. So a lot of the interests of the party is not about the county, it's about the national. So for example, with housing development and big housing developers, they'll be looking from the national about what happens in Wiltshire with housing. And so the national party will be trying to configure things to get the maximum money and resource out of that county, even if that county suffers. You know, I remember Jane Scott saying to me, because we're one of the most well-off counties, when it comes, and because it's a Conservative-led council, when it comes to getting this grant fund, which was about half the council's money every year, she had to fight with the National Conservative Party. Because they said, "Why should we give you this money? Because we've all our MPs are doing well. We want to put the money in a place where we can, where the seats are close, so that we can show that we've made a difference and we can win seats." So the whole system just did not work at all, right? And I could see this, but at the same time, as an engineer and as a designer, I could see that if you didn't have all this bullshit, if you had a council that was run by the people of the county, there were no political parties. Right, and they were able to locally ta raise taxes and didn't have to go to national government to do it. You could very quickly have a council that started to really work well for the people of the area, for as a business to make sure that the money was being spent efficiently and so on. But the other thing they did, which most people just do not, that most people are so brainwashed on, it's astonishing, is they pay the councillors nothing. Right, so what happens is I'm there working. I've got a three children, I've got a mortgage, I have a good job that pays me, not a lot of money. I go into the council And now most of their meetings are during the day and they're like 30 miles away. So I didn't have to go to my employer and say to my employer, can I take Monday of next week off? Can I take Wednesday at 2 o'clock off? Most employers will just say, I'm sorry, you can't do that, right? So you have this problem that to do the job is, and I ended up as the head of Scrutiny on a £1 billion council, and I was getting paid something like, I don't know, was it 11 or 12 pound thousand a year, no holiday pay, taxed. So I was working, probably getting about 10 grand to scrutinise a £1 billion council. And I wasn't interested in money, but to survive and to live and to be able to do the job. So I was, at one stage, I was doing about 60 hours a week. I'd be going back, doing my local council work with all my issues around, going to work and doing my design job, and then having to travel to Trowbridge and deal with all this stuff. And you see, what also happened, very interesting, was the people who are the real narcissists who are in control in these councils and who run things will turn around and say, they'll put out a PR message to say to the public, oh, Simon Killane is greedy. He just wants to get paid. He wants to take your tax money. And what they don't realise is that he doesn't give a stuff about getting paid at all. He'll say, I will give up my allowance. So I will not get paid at all, not a penny. But they're screwing the council for millions with contracts and everything else. They don't give a stuff about what they get paid. If you pay them 100,000 a year to be on the council,
Yeah, well, look, I mean, in an ideal world, the local papers or radio TV would be picking up on this hypocrisy,
they won't because
the public relations. I mean, the idea, it seems to me, is that that's what journalists and journalism is for,
well,
is
the other.
to, for the public. Because what you, if you don't do that, you end up with your local newspapers, television and radio, just literally cutting and pasting press releases of crooks.
Well, the other thing very interesting is about newspapers is I mean, again, it's quite frightening and it's hard for people to believe this. I'm not nuts. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I've got a degree in mechanical engineering. I'm a very normal, most of us are a very normal sort of practical guy, you know. I realised that for the period of the 8 years I was a councillor, when I got to this point, sort of for the first 5 or 6 years where I was just doing local stuff, I wasn't really influencing maybe somebody's, making sure we could fix some potholes in the streets and some policy on various things around the town and maybe influencing some things on a county level. But I wasn't influencing the money. I wasn't influencing somebody's investment of hundreds of thousands, but probably millions. And what happened, the papers were really good to me. They'd always publish really great little articles, Simon done this, Simon got the opening of this centre, we got a new, extra care, there's that happening. And they'd ask me questions and I'd put some comments in and I had a great relationship. As soon as I got involved with these big decisions and I was not willing to bring in these special interests or get into bed with these special interests, all of the newspapers completely turned against me. Right. And for me, it was odd because I thought, well, what's going on at the time? What's going on here? It's almost like, what have I done? And so even the news reporters who were very kind just disappeared. So there were a lot of these young reporters because they can't afford to have reporters on these newspapers these days and they change over a lot. But basically, the newspapers, it became a complete teardown. So I had, I think I had 13 code of conduct applications. So people in the town and the area had put in a complaint to the council about
So
things that I'd
you've
allegedly
gone
did.
from hero to zero. But look, we've only got a couple of minutes
Yes,
left. Can
here
you
it's zero.
just
So
try and bring this back
in a nutshell,
to
the
the
newspapers,
big
in a
stuff?
nutshell,
Can you
sorry,
try and bring this back to the big stuff, Trump? And how does this all translate into a bigger
Because it's
international?
exactly the same playbook. It's just a different scale, right? It's exactly the same playbook. What's really happening here is that all of the politicians that have really critical positions in the US are puppets, right? And so basically, there's a bunch of people behind the scenes, very rich, very intelligent, and very narcissistic people, probably known this for generations. Those people control everything that's going on. They choose the politicians. They chose Obama. They choose Bush and all these people. Trump was a bit of an anomaly because Trump had his own money and social media and Rogan and all those crazy, very interesting, crazy people supported Trump and Trump got in. But Trump is very difficult to control. I know. I met these people. They want somebody they can control. Either they control them by having information about them, their sex life, their past life, criminal activity. So basically, they say, you do what we tell you, or we will spill the
You
beans
know,
on you.
last week when he was interviewed, Trump said in a quite humble voice, he said, I trust hardly anyone, to be honest with you. And they were
He doesn't
only
trust
about
anybody.
Putin, but he's saying he doesn't even trust the people surrounding him at the White House.
He doesn't trust anybody. And the people who control the system don't trust anybody either. They're ruthless people. They're so, and but they're also very intelligent. See, this is my opinion. Trump's not an intelligent man. That's my honest opinion. He's absent-minded. He makes mistakes. He doesn't understand politics. He doesn't understand diplomacy, anything like that. He is to the controllers that I met, he would not be chosen to be a president or a prime minister. They would think he's too much, he's too unhinged, he's too much of a liability. And so what'll happen is they'll have gone along. You see what's happened with Trump. A lot of the things he said he would do after he got elected, he's not doing because he's being manipulated. It's like, well, Ukraine, you know, you said you'd end the war. Well, we can't. We can't do it. And he's coming out and he's you see all these confusing decisions because they also play him. He is like, he's easy to play. Trump is the easiest guy in the world to play to these people. So Donald Trump, in my view, would not be chosen by the people who behind the scenes who control everything, because he is, first of all, too unstable. He's too unpredictable. There, it's difficult to control him because he has his own money. You see, it's you need to have somebody who you basically finance. But also, the interesting thing is, you also need to have lots of dirt on them. And clearly, there's dirt on Trump, and it's coming out. But just from an analogy point of view, imagine you're driving a car at 80 miles an hour on the road, and Trump is driving, and he's drunk, and people in the car, there's a mother and a baby and others, say, "We need to get rid of this guy," and they focus on him, and they throw him out the window and they get rid of him. They need to remember that the steering wheel is not being controlled by him. There are people hidden in the car who they've never seen, who are controlling the car. He's just a figurehead. He's just a puppet. And as soon as he's gone, they will choose somebody else to replace him. And it will be either Democrats or Republicans. The political parties, just like the UK, they're just a sham. You know, the Liberals and the Conservatives got together to have a coalition and basically just carved out a whole pile of contracts that they were going to offer to each other as reward. Got rid of, you know, you remember the student fees, brought in the student fees, huge amounts of money went into pockets of people from that, the loans and everything else the students have to get. So the problem for the people is they're so brainwashed by PR people to focus on what on an effect of a core problem. And the core problem is these people who control everything. What we need to do is pick them out, put the spotlight on them and say, you're the guys doing this. Because it doesn't matter what you do in the US. Every president, you've seen it already, every time they have a new president, it's another guy that somebody has out of a queue of people who is inappropriate and would never be a good president in the first place.
Okay, well, look, can you pick out a few names? We've got obviously the Conservative and Labour Party slightly fading away, even though the Labour Party are in power because of their credibility. Lib Dems doing quite well and the Greens doing quite well out of it. And obviously Reform UK with Farage. So can you name a few names of people you think are behind the scenes of these parties?
Well, I could name names. I don't really want to name names, to be honest. But I would say to you, it's about Farage and people like that, is that's another sham. You just get people who are upset putting right wing, what's perceived to be right wing, because right wing's another PR term, into power. A good example is Wiltshire Council. Wiltshire Council is now run by the Liberals, right? Because of Farage. Because his party gained enough seats to stop the Conservatives from getting a majority. That council is going to go through hell because the Liberals will basically try to make sure that any contracts, any money that was going Conservative way will go their way. And I'm not talking about the Liberal Party members and the good people of the party, but the people who control stuff. All the big contracts in the council will now be twisted to go into somebody else's pocket. The Conservatives will do everything they can to destroy the reputation and destroy the any achievements the Liberals get, which means that the people of Wiltshire get nothing. So the whole thing with Farage for a county council is a complete sham and a waste of time. The other thing I'd say to you is that what I learned, and it's just so frustrating, what I learned about the system is that the big question is, how do you fix it? It's so easy to fix. To fix a political system and make it work is the simplest thing ever. And everybody I say this to says to me, you're rubbish. It can't be. It is. It's simple. It's one of the problems that these people who run the system have diverted us into nonsense. And they know that it's simple to fix. And the person who comes up and says, do these three or four things and you can fix your political system, that person will be killed. It's a very simple. Let me just give you one example. The House of Lords in London. The House of Lords is a bunch of people who are basically getting positions and being called lords, which is ridiculous in itself, because they give money to the political party and they've got businesses and connections. They're supposed to be a scrutiny chamber. They're supposed to scrutinise the policies of government. It's impossible to scrutinise policies of government that way. It's like having a referee in a football match, who's paid by, bungs by each team and by people who are sitting in the audience. It would never work. In a football match, football team organisation, the whole thing would collapse. What would you do? You'd say, okay, let's have a proper scrutiny chamber with elected independent members that can scrutinise the policies of the government, and let's build a new parliament, say in Birmingham or somewhere else. Pay your MPs bloody good salaries on condition that there's no more private funding, no more links to private businesses, no more lobbyists coming into government, all this sort of stuff. Fund your political system through tax, not through private means. And all of this, within 5 years, you will have a system of politics which is hundreds of times more democratic and decent and honourable. But I tell you that trying to get that simple message across to the people would result in the death of a person. If they managed to convince the public that it was simple to fix the political system and make it work, and that you could get elected representatives which are honest. You see, the other problem is they've convinced everybody that they can never have representatives that work for them because everybody thinks politicians are corrupt. There is no such thing as a politician. It's a made-up word. When I was in politics, I was an engineer with a father and a family man who just wanted to represent the community I was living in. I never felt like a politician from the day I walked in there. But what they've done is, through PR, they've made us believe that there's no possibility you could be represented because these politicians are corrupt. It's nonsense. So if I could convince the public and I could get them to believe what I'm saying, my life would be at risk. I'm not joking you, because they'd realise they were caught.
I mean, you do wonder sometimes if you could almost pick people at random and put them into political power looking after these big budgets, that they might do a better job, Simon.
Well, if you're a doctor in Bath RUH working for 25 years, or a surgeon or so on, surely you really could be potentially be a great minister for health. Right? You want to make sure that these people who've got experience and knowledge can get into the system. But the problem is, you have to run a campaign, especially in America, make a ton of money for you to get into the system. Let me tell you something else as well. You don't even need, this is what's crazy, you don't even need to come up with new ideas. All you need to do is look at all the different political systems around the world with people who are analytical and fact-based and evidence-based and not full of tribalism and everything else and say, okay, did that work? Did that work in Holland? Did that work in Sweden? Did that work in Norway? Because they're all slightly different. A good example is in Australia. The regional councils have no political parties. So basically, if you're in the Wiltshire Council equivalent or the Bristol Council equivalent in Australia, there's no political parties on those councils. They're all independents and they form groups and they work for their area. And it works perfectly well. It doesn't work any worse than here, because what'll happen is here they'll say, oh, independence, an independent can't influence policy. I learned that an independent MP or an independent councillor is highly powerful. They're highly powerful people because they're not beholden to the party, and the party completely controls the MPs. Literally, as soon as an MP says, I have an idea that I want to do this or that, and it goes against the party rules, they'll either be convinced not to do it, they'll either be threatened that they'll withdraw funding and they won't get nominated to
But you
even
see,
be in
Farage
the
is almost riding to power on this idea that his party is a political revolution, that he's going to reopen the steelworks, the coal mines in South Wales, that he's going to force the city not to pay interests on the big bond loans that they're taking. He's going to be changing, doing all the things
It's rubbish. He's
that.
another Trump. What he's doing is he's also a businessman. He's a financier. He's probably made a ton of money out of Brexit and all his finances. He's not to be trusted. He's a political animal. And what you're doing is you're not actually fixing the machine. What you're doing is just changing another. You're putting another puppet in. And the other thing, what will happen is, he will become pivotal. So he'll become pivotal as to who gets elected because his number of seats will grow. And what will happen is the guys behind the scenes with all their money and power will manipulate. They'll manipulate to find ways to infiltrate the people who are in his party or to get somebody else to take over from him. Until you cut the rot out of the system, until you say political, JD Vance, right? JD Vance would not be the vice president of America if it wasn't for a guy. I think his surname is Thiel. Have you heard of him? So he's a multi-billionaire financier in the US who paid for all of Vance's campaign. Right? That's how Vance got to be the vice president. He didn't get to be vice president because he was a cool guy who'd done loads of things for his community and knew a lot about, the system he was working in and foreign affairs and government and so on. He did it through the money from a guy. If you watch, go on YouTube and watch Thiel, he's unhinged. Thiel even has said something of akin to, he doesn't really care about civilization when it comes to AI, whether it lives or dies. He's the guy who funded Vance, right? And Vance goes around the place going, "Oh, I believe in fairness," and Vance is there because of the money.
Well,
If you said
Thiel has also been
more.
recently, he did a two-part talk, I think it was about 2 months ago or so, talking about the Antichrist and saying,
Yes.
well, actually, the Antichrist is, sort of some sort of figure that's coming along soon to stir things up. Well, I mean, this
I mean,
guy,
you look at
Peter
this.
Thiel, it does seem to be very, very powerful and influential, but no one's elected him. He's someone that's ridden this whole idea of the change in the banking system. No doubt he and others will be making an absolute fortune out of these cryptocurrencies and any kind of reform that there is in banking.
Yes.
So who is
And
Thiel to
they made
make.
their money. He made his money out of his family made their money out of, mining in Africa and slave labor. They're imperialists as well. They go back a long way, in this whole kind of, this whole kind of scenario. So they're none of these people are to be trusted. And the problem is that mechanistically you can easily fix a political system. I know you can. Right, but the person who can convince the public to do it will be at great risk, and it's trying to convince a brainwashed public who are being fed all sorts of diversionary tactics and misinformation. The reason why today, you look at Gaza and you look at what's going on in Gaza, there's so much confusion about what's going on. There's so much. You see the lobby. You see the great example of the people behind. You say mention names. Just go to the big lobby groups who are funding the political parties in the US who are the Israeli Jews. So there are particular people within those organizations who have more power than Trump. It's clear. They're basically driving this policy of genocide in Israel. And it doesn't matter what people do. People can campaign in the streets till the cows come home. They can pour blood over the White House. In fact, what will happen is the more people campaign in the streets, the more it will give the government an excuse to curtail their rights to free speech and to campaign. You see that's happening in the UK at the
Well, look,
moment.
I mean, you're saying it's easy to fix, and then you're also saying it's almost impossible.
It's culturally, that's the problem. And I think what's happening in the, it's very interesting. I have a very different view about what's going on in the US. The US is beginning to have a democracy. I know this sounds crazy, but just hear me out. The US, it's like a design process. The US, with the internet and so on, people starting to get information, start thinking our system is corrupt. We need somebody different. And they get the wrong guy. They get the wrong guy. They think we'll have a black guy because he's cool and he's equal rights and all this stuff. They realize that there's more racial conflict in the US now, and Obama was basically bought as well, saying we'll have this independent financial guy Trump, who's an alpha male. But the people of America, you can see, just look at Tucker Carlson and others now, who are very MAGA, very sort of pro-Trump. They're all leaving Trump, and they're all beginning to realize that's not the answer. We need a different kind of system. But they haven't quite got to it. You see, Elon Musk is going to set a party up. Well, he's a billionaire. He's unhinged himself. He's got loads of issues, personal issues. But you can see that there's a struggle going on in that country where people say it isn't quite right, but we need to find a way to create something that works. So I think we're moving in that direction, but unfortunately there are problems. And the most major problem is that these people behind the scenes have got their hands on their grip firmly on technology. AI and the advancement of AI is totally unhinged. Nobody knows what they're doing. These people who are obsessed about AI are a lot of them, like Thiel, are putting tons of money into a race with China for weaponry and dominance and military. It's all about the military. And also another massive problem that's happening is there's absolutely no discussion about what is happening to the internet, because what's happening to the internet is that the podcaster I watched last week, who I thought was very interesting and was telling me really interesting stuff, there'll be a million of those guys on it in 6 months' time because they'll all be faked by AI. We will get to a point on the internet where there is no truth. The AI will be so good at fakery that basically we will not be able. Tony Gosling, there'll be 1,000 Tony Goslings, and there'll be Tony Goslings on there saying things, "Death to Jews," "I support Hitler," "Kill the Irish." It'll be all sorts of crazy stuff. And these people who are behind the scenes know this, because it's exactly again what happened to me when I was in the council. Once you get your foot in the door and they realize you've got the door opened, they will regroup and think, how the hell do we stop this? And a brilliant way to stop truth is to fill the internet with lies. You just look at the moment. No one is doing anything about the fact that somebody could take your brilliant podcast that you do, where you reveal some really good truths about what's going on locally or regionally. And if they knew you were going to create some trouble or you were going to virally be successful, there's nothing stopping them from creating 1,000 Tony Goslings, all with different messages, so that people, when they go on there, have no idea who's the real one and who's the false one. Right? So that's another problem we've got, is that we have to wake up in society and realize that actually the problems are really easy to solve. The people behind it are making it look like they're impossible to solve. They're driving us against each other, and they're also now latching on to technology, which will give them all sorts of tools to basically try and restrict our freedoms, and will pollute the internet with absolutely packs of
Well,
lies.
look, okay, so this is a bit of a dystopia you're promoting here. It may be it's much more real than we're getting from anybody else, Simon. But we do need to know from you as an engineer, you're connecting the wires, you're connecting the pipes in the engine. How do we fix it? Let's have that in a nutshell, if you can.
Very simple. Very simple. First thing you do is you take. Well, I would. I to fix it. Simple rules. First of all, councils, regional councils, no longer have political parties. You break the link between political parties and national parties, because the national parties don't have any interest. The MP who works in Sheffield, who's head of planning or finance or gives the money to councils, has no interest in what goes on in Bristol, and it's corrupt. That's one. The second thing you do is you pay your politicians really good salaries. But they only work for the people. They have to give up all their interests, special interests, business links, the works, and they have to be published. They also have to publish any membership of any organisation that they're in, so it's everybody can see. Next thing you do is no more private funding of political campaigns, all done through taxation. So they work for the people. They're paid for by the people, right? So when it comes to elections, there's a leaflet that goes through the door showing all the candidates, what they stand for, and so on. None of it is carried out through private money. Private money is a poison. Lobbying, ban all lobbying at government level. No lobbying. You should not allow private companies to have influence on Parliament inside the doors of Parliament. You set up a proper scrutiny chamber, which has independent members. Probably what you do is you nominate them from retired professional industries. So if it's health, if it's finance, whatever, you get these people. You get rid of all the lords. You get rid of the monarchy in the UK. That's a bygone era. It does not represent fairness or equality. I know people love this thing, oh, the Queen, King, and the Queen. It's nonsense. Complete nonsense. You set up a new parliament somewhere in the middle of the UK with modern offices, modern accommodation, and so on. And you make the parliament in London a nice tourist attraction. And then another thing you do is, through your scrutiny process, you basically look at all of the other parliaments around Europe and other places, and you go out there. You go out there and you say, let's see what they did on this particular mechanism or that particular mechanism, and let's see if we can trial it here. So we'll always be constantly improving and improving our democracy and so on.
Okay, so is this inside or outside the European Union, or doesn't it matter?
Well, it doesn't matter, but the European Union is highly corrupt, right? That's the other problem. The European Union is very, very corrupt. There's not, how do you rate democracy when the people often who are representing you in the European Union are not even elected? Von der Leyen, this lady who runs around the place touting war, she's not been elected by anybody. It's a huge, corrupt organisation full of lobbyists. And it's also heavily corrupted by the US. I would guarantee you that most of the countries, and you can see this, you can see it, just watch the way the European Union literally licks the bums of the US politicians, even if they dislike them. The US, with its clever CIA tactics and its business and its manipulation, its money, I believe has totally infiltrated pretty much all of the European countries. So that the politicians, the first thing they'll do is before they get out and make a decision or say something, they'll say, what does the US think? Is it okay for us to do this? Should we consider whether we're doing it or not doing it? Right down to the point of murder, blatant murder of people like you see in Gaza.
Yeah,
They'll say,
so I
well,
mean, in the background to all of this, of course, the Chinese are inscrutably sitting there with their hands folded, watching the West almost implode on itself.
completely. And what's the mad part of this is you've never ever needed, yeah, I'm sorry, you've desperately needed an American and a Europe that was highly democratic, highly people focused, fair, working to try and make society better, improve technology, healthcare, and so on. Because the alternative is going to be for us is a completely dysfunctional shamocracy that gets basically pipped by a regime in China or in Russia that we have no idea about, that we don't know anything about how they elect their leaders, what democracy is there, and do they care about us? No, they don't.
Well,
Of
there
course
is a
not.
democracy in Russia, actually. Like, we keep
Russia,
getting
perhaps.
told there
Yes.
isn't one in Russia. We
You're
keep
right.
getting
The
told there's
Duma.
no
Yeah.
democracy in Iran. We were
Yes.
also told there was no democracy in Syria. These three are all lies.
Yes. I mean, what I'm trying to say is that there's no reason to believe that they have our interests at heart and that they're any better than us. But we need to have, that's kind of doesn't really matter. It's not a problem if we in Europe and America had a decent democratic process. We're screwed basically because if they have a great democracy there, okay, we'll be okay. But the reality is they don't care about us. The Chinese basically want to sell products to us. And we're basically trying to screw them over with tariffs under the guise that they're stealing, stealing manufacturing and flooding our countries with goods that basically are cheaper and so on. I was a product designer for 20 years. We gave it all away. I spent 20 years of my life taking designs of products and stuff that we had developed over decades and saying, just give it to Chinese because they can make it cheap. Why? Because they were using cheap labor. The West gave everything to China, and China's just doing what any country would have done. They've thought, well, we don't really need to work through them. Why don't we just set up our own companies? Why don't we just make it and brand it with our own brand? And now, because the Chinese have got an autonomy and they're moving really fast with technology because they learned everything that the West had done and they're doing a great job. We in the West have decided, oh, well, free trade and fair trade is no longer n acceptable. We have to basically say, make up a story that the Chinese basically stole it all from us or are trying to, take over. The Chinese are just trying to basically compete. And also, we were quite happy to basically buy cheap Chinese goods for decades when we had control, when they were making the components for us to put into our products. As soon as they started taking that control away, that became a problem. And that's at the core of what's going on in the world at the
Yeah, I
moment,
mean,
at the
we've got a
very
similar
top
thing in a
with
weird
China.
way, haven't we, with King Charles? No one elects him. Same with President Xi. I
Madness.
mean, they've basically created in China a kind of monarchy, really.
Yes, but the reality is, I don't know enough about China. I would definitely say that, is it the pot calling the kettle black? We do not have a functioning democracy in the UK. And the other problem is, if you go into the street and you ask people, what is democracy? They can't tell you. People, the PR machine will give you these sound bites. But in reality, what is democracy? And, I always relate democracy to a referee. A referee in a Chelsea versus Man United, at Wembley Stadium, and the referee is on the pitch, and the referee is getting paid n very little. He's getting paid of peanuts, but he's receiving bungs from people behind the two teams, and there are also lobby groups within the audience who's receiving bungs for. So basically, no one can trust any decision he makes, right? And that's the problem. If you look at the football system, did I say to you how easy it is to fix this? You'd never do it. You'd never do the same kind of structure in a foot with a football team. You'd have a referee who says, "Okay." I mean, some people make don't like refs. What I'm saying is, in general, you have somebody who's not corruptible and makes decent decisions. The other very simple thing is, I was in the private sector for years. I never saw a situation ever where a board of directors would employ a new sales director and pay him, say, 20 grand a year or 30 grand a year when the other companies were paying 100,000, right? And a commission. And then say to him, oh, you can work for us, but you can also work for our competitor down the road. It would never work. That's what MPs do. MPs get paid in real terms. They're running huge budgets. They get paid 60 or 70 grand or something like that. And then what happens is they go off and they get the millions from all these lobby groups and special interests, which is works totally against
Yeah, I mean, what you're
the.
describing here is a cartel system, really. It's like there
It's a
isn't,
cartel.
yeah, it is a
And
cartel,
they
isn't
know
it?
this, by the way. If you said to the businessmen who are behind the curtain here and running things, if you said to those businessmen, now I want you to run your multi-million pound business that you're using to gain influence from the political system, I want you to run it exactly how Parliament runs, they'd laugh at you. They'd say, no way. It would never work. It's rubbish. I'm not going to set up a mini House of Lords with people I pay to scrutinise what business decisions we make. I'm not going to pay my directors this money and then let them work for my competitors. They'd never allow it. So what I'm saying, from that simplicity, the very people who are running the show know it's dysfunctional because what they're doing is they're leeching off the political system. They're leeching off of it for their businesses. Instead, what should be happening is you say, almost like the business of government is to be an independent policy setting organization that works for the people. The people are your employers and you work for them. And if you fuck up and if you mess up, they can get rid of you. And they pay you. And they state that and they pay you handsomely. But you're not contaminated by working for anybody else. It's easy, easy, easy to do. But as I say, you've got to convince a public that has been so brainwashed. I mean, the very last thing, I went to a school when I was a councillor. I was standing to be an MP. And I was standing to be an independent, and I could not get to go to schools. They said, "Well, if you're an independent, you're not with a party. You're not allowed. You're not allowed to come." And eventually, I got to go to this one school. And when I got to this school, and I went in and I started speaking, the children in the school and the teachers—these were teenagers, so these were like 13, 14-year-olds. They were already brainwashed. Oh, my dad's UKIP. Oh, my dad is Conservative. My dad's Labour. How could an independent have any say? When I said to them, what do you know about politics and electoral representation? They said, well, Labour do this and the Conservative. It was all party politics bullshit. I said to them, who actually manages the finance of your school? None of them could tell me. I said, if you had a basketball court out there and the basketball hoop was broken or something, how could you get it replaced if there was no money directly to replace it? No answer. Who would fund it? No answer. I said, have you heard of area boards? No. I said, do you know you can get 20 or 30,000 off an area board from the council to spend on things that for the community you could get your basketball hoop replaced? Do you know that the councils have a contract with a private financing company that runs your whole school and even gets to support the toilet rolls delivered here? No. So the students knew nothing about learning about the mechanism of representation, how you could influence it, but they were completely brainwashed already on party politics. And they looked at me and there was no way I convinced them to say, you're an independent. You have no. You'll never be able to do anything, right? And you couldn't convince them. And even the teachers, you couldn't convince. So
Wow.
the
Well, that's a bit of
brainwashing is so deep, an
an
uphill
uphill
struggle.
struggle. You're right. But anyway, look, so if people are interested in finding you and following you on social media, etc., Simon, can they do that?
Yes, I have a YouTube channel. It's called Nugget of Wisdom. It gets very few viewers, so but it's my attempt to try and express this. I do feel that what I'm expressing has it's before its time, unfortunately, that it's going to take a lot of really difficult awakenings for people to realize that what I'm saying is actually true, right? And that it's all and also positive. There's so much negativity. The system's corrupt, the political system's broken, there's nothing you can do. That's what these people want us all to believe. The reality is we are living in potentially the most fantastic time ever. If we could look at it and say, look, let's sit around the table, let's figure out how we can fix it, we could do amazing things really quickly. And as I say, it's the reason why I was so targeted with an incredible hate campaign. Because as soon as these people realised that when I was in scrutiny, I could sit round with the Labour guys and the Conservative guys and the UKIP guys and say, look, we need to sort out this policy. What could we do? And bring them in. And they said, gosh, this is the first time this has ever happened. Before, we couldn't do it. As soon
So,
as
do
they
you think
realized I
the
was.
leeches are going to go out to grass or into jail?
I think the problem is the leeches, just like Trump, they go into jail, but some of the leech, some of the leech comes out in their place. The people behind the scenes will make a sacrifice. They don't care. They'll make a sacrifice of Trump or whoever it might be, and the people will have their egos triggered and go, "Oh, we hated him. He was terrible." You see this a lot. They will say, "It's this person. This person is the reason why everything's gone bad." And they'll say to that person, "I'm sorry, mate, but you're a sacrificial lamb. There's nothing we can do. We'll see what we can do for you when you get out of prison. We'll sort out your family, whatever." But in reality, the people then think it's all fixed. Nothing's fixed. They're still there. They're still running the show. It's just another person now in the queue will take over that position. That's what's happening. You'll see it next election. What'll happen? A Democratic, chisel-jawed, cool guy who helped to oust Trump and covered some of the paedophilic stuff that was going on will suddenly become the hero and will be the next president. And he'll be as corrupt as hell, or he'll be bought because they have something on him. You've got to go and focus on these people, and they leave a trail. It's money. Basically, look at all the campaigns of these politicians and who is funding them. Look at the companies they're connected to, and you'll find the people. You don't need the names, you'll
Yeah,
find
well,
them.
you do in a way. Peter Thiel, definitely one of them.
Yeah, the Israeli lobby, if you want to find out who's really calling the shots, it's the people who are pumping the money from these Israeli lobbies into the US government to fund their campaigns. It's not Netanyahu, it's not Trump. It's people you've never heard of in that Israeli lobby who are multimillionaires, who've got strong footing in politics, who are probably linked to people like Mossad, have a whole lot of dirt that they've picked out on people who have done, behaved badly or whatever. So they've got those people bought and are pumping money into political campaigns. You can find those people. It's not that difficult. And you see in the US, they're beginning to sort of realize, you hear it all the time, Israel is running the US. Why is Israel running the US? Because they're beginning to realize that there's people behind the scenes who are more important than Trump or, I mean, Starmer, seriously? Is Starmer running anything in the UK? Starmer is running nothing. He's a puppet, a complete puppet. And we all know this. Jeremy Corbyn was, in my view, maybe I'm wrong, he was a decent guy who probably had the best. He was an anomaly again in the Labour Party. When the Labour Party was struggling, they were fed up with the chisel-jawed guys, the Tony Blairs, who promised lots and did a lot of bad stuff. Along comes Corbyn, and then Corbyn gets ousted with a whole campaign, a hate campaign against him about him being anti-Semitic. So you can see the system needs to change. Getting rid of the people is a complete waste of time. It just opens up opportunities for more, and it satisfies the public. The public are fooled into thinking, crucify Trump on a cross and show some pictures of him abusing young children. The public will just go crazy, and they'll be glad that he's gone. But they'll have done nothing to fix the system. Nothing. It'll still continue. You'll still have somebody else, Gavin Newsom. Somebody else will come along who's basically pretending to work for the people, and he won't, and they won't. That's why also people say it never changes. It can't change unless the actual machine, the engine, is re-engineered. And it's easy to do.
Well, that's good to hear, Simon Killane. Thanks very much for joining
Yeah, and
us.
thank you so much for giving me the time to at least express some of this. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Simon.
Cheers.